I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
All right, welcome back to another edition of the Friday Golf Podcast. I am here with my wonderful co-host, Garrett Morrison. Garrett, how are you doing?
Hello, we are in person.
We're at the Dratty House.
We're at the Dratty House in Augusta, Georgia, and it's great to be in person.
Yeah, it is wonderful. Garrett, you just wrapped up a couple days at ANWA. I just wrapped up getting on site, checking in, getting a milling about Augusta National for a day. We're here. So this is the beginning of Masters Week. This is Sunday afternoon recording. We got a fun little activity. It was a hard activity, I have to say. We are going to rank. So I ranked 1 through 18, the holes at Augusta National, and you ranked 1 through 18, the holes at Augusta National. I don't think we set criteria. You know, this is definitely not like I didn't go about it as a ranking of like holes with the most drama or the greatest moments in Masters history. I kind of just looked at them hole by hole. So I want to preface that here. You know, I'm sure when we're talking about the holes, some, you know, people are going to be upset that maybe a certain holes or places, you know, this was just opinion. Everybody, I would urge everybody to try and do it themselves. It's actually like really hard. I like got to a point and I was like, wait, I can't believe this hole is so far down, you know? And then I was looking at what was ahead of it and I was like, I don't think there's really a spot. How did you find that?
There's a lot of less good holes here. So if a hole is in the bottom half of the ranking here, we're not saying it's bad. This is one of the great courses in the world. Obviously, it's great because a lot of the holes are really, really good. So if a hole places 14th out of 18, that doesn't mean it's bad. It just means that we think other holes are better. Yeah, criteria is a, you know, that's an interesting question here, because even if we're just ranking them architecturally and not based on memories or moments or whatever, there's still a lot of ways to rank holes architecturally. You know, should we be talking about them as competitive elite golf holes, like what they do to the players in the Masters, or should we be ranking them, you know, from the perspective of amateurs or even just all golfers, right? Should we be ranking them from the championship tees or the member tees? Because those are very different golf holes. I ended up going kind of with the Masters perspective, right? How well do these holes function in the Masters? And so right away,
we might be a little different. I even thought about it that much. Yeah, you know, okay, I just went off
feeling. Is this hole better than that one?
Well,
that's what you did.
I'll tell you what, I started trying to do this in Apple Notes. I use Apple Notes a lot to write. It's become my new like word processor, actually. But I started doing that with like a numbered list. And then I was in the media center, and one of the coolest things in the media center, Brendan hates them, but I think they're really neat, is they have these old notebooks that they, you know, I don't think anybody in the press uses it really now.
I haven't even seen them.
But they're these old notebooks. They're like an 8x11. They've got the Masters logo across, and it was like clearly how like old journalists used to chronicle rounds. It's got a player name, date, round, and you could track like, you know, what clubs they were hitting, the number of putts, and there's a space for notes, but it lists every hole, the yardage, and the par. And so it created this awesome way to rank them, because I just filled in under the club section all my rankings, and it was an amazing way to visualize it. I'll post a picture of it with the pod.
Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah. And by the way, I wanted to give some acknowledgement to where we got this idea. This is a great account name. Jean Vandeveld Revenge Account is the name of the account that proposed to us back in February. You know, he says, this is probably a very stupid theme, but I'd love to hear a Friday Golf podcast episode titled Ranking All 18 Holes at Augusta National. And, you know, we thought that was a pretty decent idea. Something fun to do kind of midweek Masters Week.
As I mentioned at the top, we are at the Dratty House. B Dratty is our great longtime apparel partner. It's spring. I think this is a great time to examine what you got going in your closet right now, Garrett. You were out on like a crisp day at Augusta. What'd you rock? What were your options from Dratty?
Now, already this ad read is going off the rails because I don't know the exact term for it. But I was wearing a B. Dratty hoodie, the one that you and I sometimes wear at the same time.
Yeah. The Proctor hoodie.
The Proctor hoodie. Yeah,
it is a great piece.
I would wear that every day if I could. If people would like let me wear the same clothes every day, I would wear that every day.
If you had like four or five of them.
Yeah, I just need four or five of them in like different colors. I think even then my wife would be like, why are you wearing the same style of hoodie every day? But I think I would go for it. It's so comfortable. It's just the right kind of thickness. You know, it's great.
So that's the Proctor hoodie. It made me think of the, a related item that they make is the Russell crew neck, which is another great one. I remember I was getting ready. We were going on like a casual date night, and I put on clothes, and I was like, "What do you think about my outfit to my wife?" You know, she always asks me, and I was wearing like a pair of pants and a Russell crew neck, and she's like, "I mean, you wear that like every day." So this is stuff I live in.
But she wasn't offended by it. She was like, "Okay. You still look good. Fine. It's yeah. not special, but it's fine."
So the crew neck, the Russell crew, the Proctor hoodie, great, great items. If you're in like a spring climate where it's a little chilly, I just got back from Northern Ireland, which was like, I think like peak spring, like kind of gnarly spring golf weather in March. I wore every day there. I wore a different Jack polo. So the long sleeve Jack polo. I'm not going to lie. Before they sent me one of these, it was one. I was like not into the long sleeve polo. Now I'm very, very, like I wear them a lot. I really like them. They're like the perfect, if it's going to be 50 degrees in the morning, item to wear. It's great. If you throw a vest on with it, you are like, you're prime time. You're like perfectly layered. So if you use the promo code TFE30, that's TFE30 at bdratty.com, you get 30% off. Big thanks to them for supporting what we do, supporting our week here down at Augusta National.
And it's the Dratty House.
Yeah.
Supporting the house. Got to have a roof over our heads.
Exactly. A lot of fun happens in this house this week. So, all right, let's get to our holes. Garrett, you're the guest here. Do you want to go one through 18, or do you want to go 18 through 1?
18 through 1, for you sure. Want
to, oh, God. We're going to start with the negatives.
Well, yeah, but we got to end on a positive note.
We're not going to hook people.
We got to send people out on a high, right?
We're hooking people in with what we think is the worst hole at Augusta National.
Right, we're going negative.
I don't think
we are the problem with media.
I want to be clear here. I don't think anybody should be able to characterize this as the worst hole. This is my 18th favorite hole.
This is the least good hole. Yeah. I think
what hole do you have?
I got seven.
I got seven too. So I was doing this and I was like, I know Garrett's going to have seven as the worst. And I almost zigged just so we had something different, but I couldn't get myself to do that. Why do you have it here? It's probably the same reasoning as me.
I think it's just the ultimate example of what tiger proofing has wrought. You know, not every bad thing that has happened to that hole is a result immediately of tiger proofing. There have been a lot of trees on that hole for a long time, but now it's just long. It's got trees really close on both sides. The fairway is really narrow until it opens up toward the
approach
to the green.
Can I tell you another little thing about that fairway? It's so hard to hit.
Yeah.
Because
you go off the right side.
It can't. You can't really see it from TV, but the fairway slopes pretty at a pretty good clip left to right.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's so hard to hit. It's so narrow. Functionally, the 10 yards of the right half of the fairway mean you're going to go in the rough. And then you're probably going to be blocked out.
Yeah, yeah, you've got tree trouble. And yeah, you've summed it up right there. It's just, it's not, it's, you know, when I say it's not the hole it was meant to be, obviously, as soon as Perry Maxwell lengthened that hole and put the green up on the hill, instead of having it down below in the valley where it was originally, the hole kind of took on its identity. You know, it's not quirky. It has not been a quirky hole for a long time. But I think the narrowing and the lengthening have just kind of turned it into a slog. It's a place where, you know, they're just trying to keep the scores a little bit higher. And I understand that, but, you know, that's why it's the least good hole.
All right. So my devil's advocate take on like how you could, you know, if you love seven, I think this is what people might say, is listen, it's the most execution tee shot out there. And maybe the golf course, from a sense of tee shot variety, should have one hole where it's like, you have to hit it really straight. I think like Augusta has a lot of like pretty generous corridors where the corridor space, you every hole you want to be a certain spot, but the corridor spaces are fairly wide. Now they might say, in terms of variety, this gives it one very narrow hole that you have to execute on this narrow thing. It's a change up from the rest of the course. It's a different window. And then the other side is there's been a lot of really exciting moments that have happened from the trees approaching that green. There have been some cool shots over the years.
Yeah. And I think the green itself is pretty interesting.
You know,
it slopes off pretty hard to the left side. There's a number of different sections to it. So again, this is Augusta National. There's going to be a lot of cool things about any individual hole, but this is just the one I think of when I think of what has kind of gone the wrong direction for me at Augusta in the past 25 years or so.
And I think like every one of these holes, for the most part, has a really interesting green. And what's cool about this green is it's really the most shallow green. And it's just like you have to hit a really, really great second shot here. And it's a cool green. So,
all right. Why don't we go with your 17th ranked hole? What do you
My got? 17th. I have this in chronological order on my computer, but I'm using the lists here. This is probably going to be controversial. I have 18. That's my 17th ranked hole.
Okay.
Where Explain. Is it on your list?
Let me see. I was just numbering them because I have them in order instead of like numbered. So 18, 17, 16, 15, 14, 13. I have it at 13. That was one that was a little difficult for me to place. I do think it has a pretty wonderful green.
It does, so but every hole there has a wonderful green for the most part.
Absolutely. I think the other thing that I like about it is that I like it at the end of the tournament when, you know, you finish up this stretch of pretty gettable holes and you come to 18 and you've just got to hit a banana slice around the corner and a, you know, straight uphill shot and find the right section of the green. For some reason over the years, I've gained some more affection for it, but why is it 17?
I just don't love like the outside bunkers in terms of the golf hole. They weren't there originally. I don't think the hole really needs them.
That tee shot looks ridiculous. When you look down that chute, all you can see is the bunkers.
I think the thing about Augusta that I love the most is the tee shots that have like a lot of dynamics to them. Like if you play here, you get this, but you could play over here and it's like the shades of gray that it's like the golf course isn't like you're not right or wrong when you hit a tee shot on most holes. It's not like a true or false. And 18 feels like it's a true or false. Like it feels like every tee shot at Augusta is kind of like an essay. And it's like, you know, when you're writing an essay or when you used to write an essay and you've gotten off to a really bad start, you know, like it's like,
I'm familiar with this.
This is not going to be very good, you know, like, but I could save it. There's still time to save it. That's how every tee shot at Augusta feels like even if you hit a bad one, you're like, okay, I can redeem myself here. The 18th, it just doesn't feel like it. It feels more true false than like giving you the chance to redeem yourself, even if you get off to a bad start. That being said, there are some really cool things that I like about the hole. A subtle thing that I really love about the hole is I think like for a finisher, having the approach shot, hitting an iron off an upslope when you're uncomfortable, when you're trying to get around to the house is really hard because yes. like hitting irons from an upslope, like if you're not feeling right, it's really easy to tug them left. It's really easy to leave them high out right. Like you have to make a really committed swing. And that upslope is like pretty severe. It is like, it is a not an easy shot. So I think they're like with all these holes, again, it's the least bad. Like this is just kind of where I like, I was doing this exercise and I just like, there are things about every other hole that I liked a little bit more. I like the green. I like a lot of other greens more though. So it's here. I don't think this is right or wrong answer. And again, this isn't about like the moments that happened here. It's more so about the hole. Obviously, if we were going with like moments that happened on this hole, it would be way higher because it's literally
it's
like
the last hole
determining championships.
Yeah. Yeah. So it has that position because it's the last hole. And I think that part of my view of it is a little bit biased by that. But I also had it in my bottom half of holes. So I'm pretty much on board with everything you're saying there. You want to hear my 17th ranked hole? 16.
I knew yours was going to be there. I bumped it way up.
What did you bump it to?
I bumped it to 13.
Okay, well, that's where I had 18. So we're actually in the same situation here. Now, this is a bit of, admittedly, a petulant take from me. 16. I just think that hole has a lot of potential, even where it's laid out now. Robert Trent Jones rerouted it after World War II. Right? The old McKenzie hole is not coming back. It was in a different place. I think there's still a lot of potential in that hole. Obviously, it's created a number of wonderful moments during the championship, like some of the roars that have happened there, some of those hole-in-one opportunities. But people may be surprised by my main objection here. It's not necessarily that the funnel pin is silly. The funnel pin is what it is. I think it is a little bit silly, but you know, it's so exciting that I can almost forgive it. The main thing that bothers me about the hole is that the green is just totally out of style with the rest of the greens at Augusta National. There's not as much interesting shaping or ideas on or around that green. It's pretty much a straight tier.
I think especially around the green.
Around the green is the biggest tell that that's not an original green. If you look around the greens at the exterior contours on pretty much every other hole at Augusta National, there's something really artful and clever going on. Look at the first green, look at the fifth green, look at the 14th green, look at the 17th green. If you walk around those greens, you can see some artistry going on and some thought going into how the green is built up from the grade. 16, it just, the transition from the putting surface to the fringe is pretty much flat. And I think that's a bit of a miss at a course that is so identified with its green contouring.
All right. I had it 13. I'm just, you know, we talked about not doing stuff on history or moments. I think I probably got it up there because I was like, you know what?
A lot of moments.
Lots of moments. And it's pretty. You know, I think that's probably
it's very pretty.
And I think like
it's so beautiful in that little valley there. That's why I think it has such potential, because it's a great place for the hole.
I also will say, like, I love watching golf at a lot of places at Augusta National. The atmosphere there on a weekend is like, if you know, okay, I say this like every kind of pod or tip that I give people when somebody asks me for tips for watching at Augusta National. If you ever get the chance to go on the weekend, which is like a very rare ticket, this hole gets like loaded up. It's, you know, everybody's going to watch golf there because of the chances. Like one of the cool things about Augusta is the policy on seats. It's very much a like shared thing. So it is perfectly cool if you see an open seat to go sit in the seat. And if the people that come the people that put the chairs down come, they're just going to tap you on the shoulder and say, oh, hey, this is my seat. And you just get up and go. And it's like a fine thing. So if you see two open seats, you're milling about, you can go sit. And like, I think I moved it up to 13 mainly because like on a Saturday, on a nice Saturday or Sunday at the Masters, it is, there is not like really a better place to watch golf than right there.
It's great. And something that I noticed during this last ANWA is how close that 15, 16 hub is.
Oh, it's amazing.
To the central hub of the property, which is 2 green, 3 tee, 17 green, 8 tee, 7 green. That whole area is basically the center from which the routing kind of radiates out. And the magical thing about it is that you can just walk straight to it from the clubhouse because there's a big thoroughfare down there to the side of the 18th fairway. You just cross a couple of holes and you're there. From that point, from that central hub, it's not very far at all to 15 and 16. So it's really kind of part of that whole complex.
Well, it's so close too to like 5 green, 6 tee, 6 green.
Right.
It is like, I mean, it's right there. It
yeah, because
like,
6 green is basically right on top of the 16th hole.
When you think about that hole, it's kind of like almost the very center of the golf course. From like a, you know, it's an oddly shaped golf course. It's not, and it's like one of the center points of the golf course is that, like that hole.
Yeah. Well, so we're making a good argument for it, but the fact is, I think it was just a kind of obvious miss not to match that green to the rest in general style. You don't have to repeat ideas, but general style should be cohesive across this golf course. What do you have for your 16th place hole?
All right, I'll go.
Should I go? Oh yeah, it's my turn.
All right,
my turn. I'll go. Fourth hole.
That's fine. That's fine.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Agreement. I don't think this is a bad hole.
Me either.
Don't think so.
It's a really hard hole.
It's very hard. It's very long for what the green is.
I mean,
that's the thing about it.
So shallow.
You can't land the ball on this green with a long club.
There is an amazing knob right in the middle of it in the green, and it's a very subtle shelf, and it's terrifying. It is terrifying if you're on the wrong side of it. Like, it is scary. Legit, putting from the back to the front of this green is scary.
Yeah.
I just think it doesn't have a ton of character.
It's just a little one-dimensional, and it's an Eden hole, right? That was the original idea, that this would be an Eden hole. And it just seems like there's more that you could do with an Eden hole. And of course, originally the green was different. They had this big tongue coming down on the left. I think that central bunker was smaller. It's really big now, and it kind of dominates the front of the green. It just kind of turns the hole into carry this bunker and try to stop your ball on the other side of it instead of something more nuanced.
I think the other aspect of this hole that makes it feel a little bit, It's so siloed off from the rest of the course. And a lot of this is like infrastructure that the club has. Like, I think one of the member restaurants is very close by. There's a road that goes kind of like behind 5T. And this hole just like kind of like, it feels, if you were thinking of Augusta National as a house, it feels like a weird off the side of the house room. It's like a mud room. You know, like it's like part of the house, but it's not really in the house, if that makes sense.
Totally makes sense. I love that analogy. I've never heard that applied to golf before.
And I think that's like one of when I was thinking about the hole and why, because I do really like the green. And again, this is a really great golf course. So like all these holes, like
good holes. We're no longer talking about holes that are kind of jacked up. These are good holes.
I think that's part of it. If you think about where it is, and this is partly like infrastructure, like all the things that go into staging this tournament. But if I looked from the tee up 5, if that was all open, I think I'd feel a lot differently about this hole. If I could just like see up 5, if I could see down 6, like, and down 16 and through 15, like through the valley, I think I'd stand on this tee and be like, what a cool hole. But because it's so walled off, and because, like what you said, I think the green and the bunker have gotten a little bit out of whack in terms of how, their interaction
yes.
and scale. Like, everything feels off because you have this like huge bunker in this walled off room and a really cool green that's masked in it. And it kind of like, of all the holes at Augusta National, 7, 16, it feels the most ordinary. It feels like the hole that you could see at any golf course in America the most.
Mm-hmm. It's just a carry, you know, and in some ways this is a comparison that doesn't do justice to this hole or to Augusta National really, but in some ways it reminds me of the 12th hole at Pebble Beach. You know, it's just a simple kind of mid iron, but for these guys, mid iron.
Much better carry. Green than the 12th at Pebble Beach.
Much, much better green. Obviously, yeah. I think that's a given when it comes to Augusta, but that's, you know, the spirit of it, just kind of carry this bunker and make sure your ball stops on the other side of it. It's kind of what it's become. Now players get into interesting situations once they're on and around the green, and that's the difference. So,
all right, my number 15, I'm sad. I'm like, actually like extremely sad. This is 15 because I feel like it could be honestly a top 5 hole on the golf course, and it's kind of like the look what they've done to the beautiful
to
boy
my beautiful boy yeah
like if when I think about this, because the green is I think it's a top 3 green on the golf course. The 17th hole is my 15th,
and it's probably because of what they've done to the fairway.
Yeah,
right? Like what's happened with that whole situation
reason,
there.
The reason it's here is it's become super one-dimensional with the tree planting narrow fairway, and it just has kind of lost the idea. Like when you have like truly extraordinary greens, you want the ability to have shots come in to them from different angles. What you're doing is you're creating more outcomes for the way the play on the hole can play out. The more space you allow players, the opportunity to get to places that they could take advantage of certain pins or be at extreme disadvantage for other pins. And this green, God, I think I could just sit and stare at it all day. I would,
especially the back of it. And also the internal contouring.
The thing that's probably the most amazing aspect of it is that it looks like that back right is a shelf that's higher. But the way the ball rolls on the green, it runs from left to right like it's downhill.
Right.
And that's the whole that's sitting on the whole slope of the property that goes left to right. So it's an optical illusion. I mean, the back left little bowl, the front section, the pin just over the bunker. I could go there. This green's amazing, amazing right. green. And it's being, the brilliance of the green is being kind of diminished by how execution the tee shot is, similar to what we talked about with 7. But this is just a out of this world great green. And it's gotten itself to 15 despite, you know, kind of the narrowing.
Yeah, I have it at 12 just because of how much I love the green, but I can't go much higher than that. One question I have that's not answerable is how much of the green and which sections of the green are original, because the front of it is not original. That's not what Mackenzie and Jones designed in the early 1930s. There were no bunkers in front of that original green.
There's no bunkers on the whole hole.
Yeah. And it had this this big kind of mound to the left of the green. Now, I suspect that the back of the green and some of the internal contouring is kind of still what they built. But I believe Perry Maxwell may have made some alterations.
He put some fronting bunkers on the left and right side in 38.
And that's kind of what produced the modern green, which is still wonderful. And by the way, Perry Maxwell, one of the great builders of greens in the history of golf architecture, so that there wasn't any kind of bad lineage coming into Augusta with those alterations. But one thing I noticed this last time when I was really looking at 17 is that the fairway kind of tilts against the general tilt of the property. It goes from right to left, but then there's this knoll to the right of the current 17th fairway. Once you crest that, then you start going left to right down toward Amen Corner, and that's where the 15th fairway is, which tilts left to right from the perspective of the 17th tee. So these two holes are kind of separated by a peak, right? And there used to be no trees where there is a grove of trees now pinching the fairway from the right between the 17th and 15th holes. And so the strategy here used to be, Mackenzie said in writing about the hole, that you want to come into this green from the right side of the fairway. But if you get too far to the right, then you're rolling down into the 15th fairway and you're probably blind into the green from there. So you want to try to get to the edge of this slope to find an angle into the green. That was the original essence of the strategy. But now there are trees all over what this advantageous position used to be. And that's the problem. That's the problem. It's an execution tee shot into a wonderful green.
All right. What was your 15th?
My 15th place hole is 9.
All right. And I have this 12.
I think this is an entertaining hole to watch, especially once you get up around the green. You never know what's going to happen. I just think it's become a little bit one-dimensional. Off the tee, obviously, a draw is preferred.
I love the tee shot. I actually think the tee shot's really good.
Yeah, and you can kind of position yourself nicely. Yeah, do players kind of get in similar positions down at the bottom of this valley somewhat? But when you stand on that tee and watch players hit shots, you realize that they really have to hit a good golf shot.
It's an unnerving tee shot for the modern game where everybody hits a fade. You stand on that tee and really, like, you feel like you have to make a really good swing to, like, at the bare minimum, you can't, like, just hit, like, the ball that, like, kind of, like, just slides right. You need to at least hit it straight.
Yeah. Absolutely. And if you get out of position...
And I think, like, the thing that I would say versus, like, the other holes that we've talked about is, like, they did this. This hole, you stand on the tee and feel that way without trees just all over the place.
Right. There's a tight line in a wide fairway.
Yes.
And so that's what really still works about this tee shot, I think. Now... the green, I don't know if there's necessarily anything wrong with it. It's just really, really tilted, and it doesn't have as much putting surface as it used to have, and so the pin positions are really limited, and I guess that's my issue with it.
Yeah, I have it a little higher just because, like, I think, like, the thing is, I think 9 for me would fall the most with, like, tree removal, you know? It would tumble down. And it might be, but, like, to me, the hole is really, it's hard for me to come up with a reason I don't like the hole.
Yes.
And I know what the old green used to look like, and there's a lot of romanticism around it. I think the current green works really well with how the golf hole lays out. Like, all the, like, where you're hitting a short iron from a downslope to a green that you can't miss short, and you can't miss long left. And so you know you can't miss short. And so you naturally pull it long left. And then long left is awful. So I just think it's, like, a really cool hole. It requires, like, it's super scoreable. But it requires really good shots. And if you don't hit one of them, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I got to do something really good to make par. You know? And so I like it. And again... this is a great golf course. So, like, it's 12. I'm talking about this, and it's 12 on my list.
Yeah. You're talking about a hole and you like.
Yeah. All right. 14.
Let's do 14. What is your 14th place hole?
I think you're up again.
Am I up again? Okay.
Yeah. Only when we overlap.
This is another slightly petulant take, but there's some feeling behind it, and that's 11.
I struggled.
This is a great golf hole. This should be 11. A great golf hole. The reason I've put it down here below 18 and below 17, where it doesn't belong.
I have it 10.
Okay. Yeah, and that might make more sense. Is that this should be a top 4 top three hole at Augusta National, but they've monkeyed with it too much. Distance gains have had their effect. I don't necessarily blame the club here, though the execution of some of the recent work on the hole has been pretty questionable. Not just the idea, but the execution. I think really the story here is that this hole can't be what it's supposed to be because the tee right now the pros is in the wrong place.
I will say this. The worst moment in the round at Augusta National, if you were playing the back tees, is without a doubt. I mean, it's the worst moment spectating at Augusta National, if you're following a group, is after the 10th green. Like, do I walk back 200 yards to the tee? Like, do I walk up that hill? And I could only imagine what playing competitors, like what the participants feel. You know, it's like a big uphill walk back to that tee. And it's like, versus just walking right off the member tee sitting there, it's just like kind of like a jarring thing.
Right.
So,
yeah. And I don't have a solution here. I'm identifying a problem that might not have a practical solution on the current footprint of the course. But I really think that tee belongs way more to the right. And obviously the walk from 10 green to 11 tee is a problem in itself. But I think the choice that you're making from that right tee that used to exist there when the 10th hole was different, the choice that you're making is between trying to cut the corner and maybe get yourself a shorter approach into the green, or go to the left side of the corridor and find that nice little angle to try to run the ball up onto the green off of those mounds. Well, short right of the green.
I think that's one of the issues with the you hit on the execution of the work is that
the mounds and how
the green's now like almost propped up
yes.
from the right side. I think this was an effort to make, you know, I think changes happen because they watch how players and I think this is a hard position to be in. There's a lot of advantages to having a tournament at a course every year. Like, there's fan familiarity, you know, understand infrastructure. I can only imagine the difficulty of not making, you know, of making decisions. And you watch players play, and what had happened with this hole is that players just bailed out right, took the chip up. So they've made the area on the right side, the bailout, more difficult. But in doing this, they've like actually like, The original features of the hole don't work anymore because there's like a cut between the mounds that were originally on the short right side. And I think there is like a little bit of a romanticism here. No modern player is going to use these mounds to get the ball close to the hole like they might have when they were hitting like a fairway wood into this green. But it is fairly relevant for like Anwa. It's very relevant for member play.
It's very relevant Larry Mize.
Yeah, it's
or
very,
was when he for, was playing the Masters.
And it's very relevant for just like the golf hole and how it functions. And again, this change makes it less of a strategic hole, more of an execution hole. And I think if you were going to like chart this podcast where like aspects of the holes are, you know, where we dock them, it's usually around that ground.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, the green contouring has been changed so much that it's a little bit hard to remember what the original contouring was and what the rationale behind it was. And so would love to see them try to bring back small elements of that bit by bit. And also, I don't like the pond. I just don't like that. I wish that it was still the creek, but I know that's unreasonable. But I just, you know, bring the creek back to 15, bring the creek back to 11. We don't need these ponds.
Even if they made it, if it was like halfway between the pond and the creek, where it was like a creek inlet, sure. You know, it made it like appear
like
the creek,
bay in the creek.
Like the creek got super wide.
Yeah.
You know,
something connected to the landscape because the little pond is just. You know, it screams mid-century golf architecture at this point, and we don't need it.
I think like the hard thing, if you were going to like approach it, I think like the question would be, if we do this, if we return to the green contours on the right side, then people are just going to start bailing out again, and we don't want that. Like, because now what they've done is, like, if you miss right in the tournament, if you bail out right of one of those back pins, your chip, like, you have to hit a good chip, and you can easily chip it into the water.
Yeah.
If you don't hit a good chip.
Right.
And I think that's the thing that they wanted to do, was like, all right, let's put a second thought so that people just, so people can, will hit it into the water again.
Mm-hmm. And look, that makes sense, because, and that gives tension back to the second shot, where, you know, when the pros are hitting that second shot, they have to challenge the water a little bit. They need to, they're being forced to. And so when that ball is in the air, it's nerve wracking.
And so this is, I think, like, we just have to put out there, this is a lot to do with, like, modern hitting distances. It has to do with what Anthony Kim said this week at LIV, where he said, I spent 12 years away. I can't believe the drivers, how you don't have to hit it in the center. I mean, this was one of the greatest quotes. And, like, it was like, you know, Anthony Kim's effectively been in a time machine.
And he wasn't playing in the late 90s.
Yeah.
He was playing in the late aughts and early 2010s.
For those that might not have seen this, he talked about at the end of his press conference how drivers, how much they've changed, because he didn't play golf for 10 years.
Right.
And he's like, I can't believe how you don't have to hit it in the center anymore for it to go straight. Like, it seems like you can hit it anywhere on the face and it goes just as far and just as straight.
Yeah.
So that was, like, effectively his quote. But, like, this is part of the reason. These are all reactions to nothing happening. There was no equipment. There was a very lenient equipment regulation. And this is all... A lot of these changes were forced because of this.
Yeah, and a key factor, a key determining factor for where a hole is appearing on my list is how affected it has been by distance gains. There are certain holes at Augusta National that, for whatever combination of reasons, haven't been as affected. Those ones are more likely to be higher on the list.
All right, let's take a break from this rousing, rousing debate, Garrett. Let's talk about our new coffee partnership. It's with Good Walk Coffee. We have some branded coffee. We've got the Shotgun Start blend, which is a little bit of a darker blend, and
medium dark.
Yeah, medium dark. And we've got the Fried Egg Golf brand, which is a medium light blend.
Medium light.
Yeah. They are two different blends. This is great coffee. So the way it works is you go on to goodwalkcoffee.com/friedegg, and you can order our blends there. They ship it directly. It's basically roasted and shipped directly to your house. You can subscribe there, and, you know, you don't have to worry about if I ever run out of coffee. Like, my honestly nightmare feeling at 10 p.m. is when I, like, realize I don't have coffee the next morning. And it's like, oh, like, I don't like my I don't like the coffee shop in my town. I, like, actually loathe it. It's been a great thing because I, like, don't like it, so I never go, so I never waste any money there.
There you go.
But then it's like, well, then I'm gonna have to go to the grocery store before I get my coffee. I now with Good Walk, I have coffee all the time, so I don't have to wait for it. It's delicious coffee. We picked them out ourselves. Kind of tried a bunch of different blends, and we have a bunch of different beans. These are the two we picked. Wanted to have a little variety. Which one do you like?
I really like the Fried Egg blend because I like a little bit lighter, but still on kind of the medium spectrum. And, you know, I'm pretty persnickety about my coffee. I've gotten to that point in my life. You know, I started off when early in my coffee life, I would kind of drink anything. But gradually over the years, I've gotten more and more specific and discerning about what I'm looking for from coffee. I want it to taste really good. And Good Walk is great stuff. Everything I've had from them, including the Fried Egg blend, has been absolutely delicious, has met my standards, has met my wife's standards. We're very thrilled to be partnered with them.
All right. And, you know, not only does this coffee help us, you know, it supports us when you purchase this coffee, we're also going to give you 20% off. If you use the promo code FRIEDEGG at checkout, you get 20% off your order. That's promo code FRIEDEGG for 20% off. Let's get back to the whole debate. I can't wait to keep going in on this.
I'm not sure whose turn it is.
It's
at
mine.
This point.
We're on. We're on 14 still. I have hole one.
You have hole one. Okay. This is our first disagreement.
I love the green. I think it's one of the best greens on the golf course. I think there just isn't a lot of space off the tee. I think those bunkers are huge. I mean, they're
massive.
They
yeah.
are massive. And they just like, if you turn on 97 and watch Tiger and look at the first hole and turn on now and look at the first hole, it's like, this is like, I mean, it is like a departure. It is insane. It's a great opening hole in terms of like, again, it's a great hole. I don't love like what's happened to it over the last, you know, 20, 30 years.
You know, I think a lot of people who are enthusiastic about golf architecture would agree with you here, but I just really like this hole. I have it at number six.
That's...
And, you know, I think that the reason I like it now, not thinking about the hole's history, I'm sure that if I looked closely at what the original design was, I would see a bunch of elements that I would want to bring back. I think the trees have come in really close. But as a first tee shot in a championship, I think it has a unique tension and a strategic weight to it that is really compelling. And the reason is that you have that big, intimidating bunker on the right. Is it too big? Is it too deep? It kind of looks ridiculous in a lot of ways. But... It's there, and the only thing you're thinking off the tee is, I need to avoid this. But then the fairway tilts from right to left, quickly into the trees on the left, and you look up at the green, which you can see perfectly from the tee, perfectly just kind of hovering above the lip of the bunker and the crest of the hill there. You can see the green and another big bunker on the left side of that green. And the fairway bunker and the green side bunker kind of line up visually. And so you see that kind of line on the hole and you're like, that's the line of danger right there. How am I going to negotiate this? Well, I kind of got to challenge the big fairway bunker off the tee, or else I'm not going to be able to hit driver on this hole. Because if I don't challenge the bunker and I hit driver, that tilt of the fairway is going to kick me into the trees on the left. And I'm going to have that huge greenside bunker in front of me. I'm not going to be in a good situation. So you have to take it on a little bit. And I love that. It's, you know, at a regular golf course, you know, gentle handshake concept, opening hole, this is definitely not that. Then you get to the green and it's obviously just like a work of art and incredible. So that's why I like the first hole, but I recognize that there are many people who know more than I do about golf architecture who really don't like what it's become.
I love the green. I think the green is amazing. I think, I think the other feature of the hole is similar to 18, like where people drive it to, where people really used to drive it to too. It's you're uncomfortable at the start of the round and you're hitting an iron from an upslope again. It's just not a nice spot to hit an iron from.
Yeah, it's a really, really hard hole.
Yeah, it's super hard. I think both of us are 13th. My 13th was 16 and your 13th was 18. So we've already talked about both those holes.
My 12th is 17, which we've already talked about. What's your 12th?
My 12th is the 9th, which we've already talked about. So
great. Okay, we're rocking. We're getting
through.
All right,
through. What's your 11th?
To the back nine. My 11th place hole is 2.
All right. I have 5.
You have this really high. Okay. So I'll start. It's not that I don't like this hole.
2.
Yeah, 2. I have it as... I have it...
I don't have it
place.
Super high. I have it 8th.
Oh, I thought you said... Okay.
I have the 5th hole as my 11th.
I got confused there. All right. So in any case, two
listeners probably were confused also.
Yeah, I was. Listeners, if you were confused, so was I, but I probably shouldn't have been. So number 2 I have is 11th. They've just moved the tee back and to the left. I understand why they did it. They did the same thing in the past couple of years to 13 and 15 and restored some strategic value to the shots that you hit on those holes.
You don't think everybody should be able to hit it like way down the hill on two?
That's the thing, is that everybody's been getting down there. And now with three woods, because they can actually draw a three wood, right? You need to hit a draw to get down the hill and skirt that big fairway bunker on the right.
I don't love that big fairway bunker on the right.
No, it's kind of an eyesore, but it's very visually intimidating. I mean, it's kind of like the one on one, but
I might move it back a little when I think about that fairway bunker.
Yeah. And, that fairway bunker is more of a factor this year because of where the tee is. They kind of shoved the tee over to the left, moved it back 10 yards.
I saw the picture they posted on Instagram, and it does look like, I mean, it looks like you're just staring at the bunker.
And there might be a little bit of an optical illusion there with the camera. I'm not sure that the tee like points at the bunker like that picture on the Masters Twitter account made it look like it does. But certainly the repositioning of the tee has brought the bunker more into play, and so you have to hit this big sweeping draw to get down the hill. Again, get why they did it. They wanted to restore some value to hitting that great shot and earning the downslope toward the green, but the result is a hole that just looks a touch absurd. Now, I have this ranked fairly high, so I really like this hole. I think it's exciting, especially as the second hole in a championship where you've had a really hard first hole and now you've got an opportunity on the second hole, but you got to hit a proper golf shot.
One of the most fun shots on the course is the second shot into this hole.
Roller coaster. It's just pure fun.
So it's high on my list because it's honestly one of the most fun. One of the most fun shots on the hole is if you're going for that green in two.
Yeah.
It's like you're trying to plot out exactly where you want it to go. You're running a ball in, which I think is like super rare in modern golf. It's like a hole where you're really like chasing a ball into, if the pin's on one of the back areas, like you're chasing the ball in. I just love that. And then I just love you turn the corner and it's this amazing reveal of you look down, like, you know, you're up on high on the ridge, and two, you turn down and you see the golf course just open up in front of your eyes.
Yeah. And I think you get to that central hub.
Yeah. I think there's like an intrinsic value of that makes it like, I move it way up in my list because of that. It's like that second shot into on that hole is kind of like your welcome to the real heart of the golf course.
Yeah.
And I think I place just a little bit of value on that. And I love also, you know, there's a lot of different greens at Augusta National. This is one of them that really sits down beautifully on the ground.
I was just going to say that. I like the variety that introduces, because so many of the greens at Augusta are built up in these monumental, spectacular, eye-opening ways. Now you have a green on a fairly severe slope that just sits on it.
Well, so there's a lot of green. So there's a lot of, I think there's like a couple different types of greens at Augusta. For the most part, when they're on flat land, they're all built up. So think 1, 8, 5. I know I'm forgetting a few. 14 that's more into a ridge. Mm-hmm. But then they have, you know, the holes that are set into ridges.
Yes.
And that you would think of 10.
Right.
You'd think of, you know, 3, you'd think of, I mean, you could go down the list. And then you have other holes that are set on the ground.
Right.
And 2 would be one of them that's set on the ground. Mm-hmm. 11 used to be more set on the ground.
7 now is built more into a ridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now 11's more set up.
Yes.
I think that was our kind of talk about it.
Right.
And then you have the holes like 12, 13 that have the creek as a hazard that run along them. And those are set on angles with the creek. But 2 is one of the rare greens that's set on the ground. Kind of sits, that's another green that I really love sitting at. Again, use the chair policy. If you're going to for a tournament round, use the chair policy, go snag a chair. It's a really fun place to watch golf. So that would be my 8th. My 11th ranked hole is 5.
Okay, your 11th ranked hole is 5. Okay, I have this 10th, so not that far apart. I think it's a brilliant hole.
I think this could be in my top 4 if the bunkers shifted left. And one of the things, and this could all be spectator flow. This, again, these are the decisions you make when you host a tournament. You have to do things. And to me, the best part of this hole is the left side. There's this unbelievable landform. It kind of sits on the ridge.
Right. It sits on the ridge that
and the spectators,
sits, then plays off.
Yeah, the spectators effectively walk on the ridge line.
Right.
And I always just think, like, that's where you want to be hitting your second shot from to open up this unbelievable green. Mm-hmm. So to me, you know, I think probably a lot of this hole is partly spectator flow and just the means of getting people around it. It's not a great hole to watch golf in general, like just because like you're kind of back there and this
and
has
it's isolated.
Yeah,
right?
It's isolated.
You're not in one of those.
You kind of get into no man's land when you go down to 4 green and then up through 5. But like because you got to get people, I think that this is part of the reason. But the best part of that hole, the line of charm. The ideal line, really, you know, Alistair McKenzie and Bobby Jones talked about this being the road hole. This is the line
that's
that
the
you
hotel.
Want, and it's in trees.
Yeah, yeah.
And the bunkers are pushed in, and it pushes everybody. Like, you're hitting to the bad angle. Like, there is, you aren't allowed to get to where you need to get to have, like, a really wide dynamic scoring range. I don't know if it would necessarily change, but my theory would be if you could get to the left side, you'd see a lot more birdies from there than from the right side.
Yeah.
Now trying to get to the left side might yield more doubles. And guess what? That's what makes golf really interesting when you have the high variance of scoring. People knowing I have to get over there if I want to make a 3.
I'm not sure I have anything to add to that. I think that's really good. The green is obviously one of my favorites on the course, and I think that's why I have it this high. You know, this is a hole with an interesting history. It's supposed to be their version of the road hole, but there's not really a road bunker situation here. There are some preferred angles and some complexities with the green. I think initially Alistair McKenzie was sort of planning to put a bunker kind of in front of the green that would allow players to find an advantage along the left side of the hole. It's really a reversed road hole. So I don't know. This is a hole I need to find out more about its history and think about what they could reasonably do to restore some of that strategy. But beautiful golf hole with an incredible green and you know, obviously some things to do.
So my 10th was the 11th hole. What is your 10th?
The 5th hole. My
all right,
ninth.
We're on to 9.
My 9th place hole is 6.
I had this 3.
Okay, you have. Wow, I didn't expect this one. I'm excited to hear the explanation. Now, I love this green. I think it's great. I just can't quite get to putting it above the other 8 holes on the rest of my list. That big shelf back right is really fantastic. And then what's underrated about the hole, I think, is how cool and subtle the rest of the pin positions on the green are. There are these little ripples, little shelves all over the green, and then that big one back right. So every pin, I'm kind of excited to watch, and that's why I like the hole.
You just explained why I put it 3. I just think it's like a super fun shot, really great to watch. If you put this hole in place of 16, I think everybody would say that might be the best par 3 at Augusta National. I think just by the casualty of where it is in the routing, hole 6, in the middle of the front 9, that it doesn't get the love, appreciation, and due. I think this is just a magnificent golf hole that's like, it's a pretty great par 3. I can think of like, if you took the 6th hole and put it on like almost any other course, people would be like, that 6th hole. Have you seen the 6th hole there? And this golf hole, that nothing's really been monkeyed about that much. And that's true.
Well, they just monkeyed a little bit.
Yeah.
this is Sean Martin reporting that they they put some runoffs in back of that back tier, which makes it even more difficult to reach.
So I haven't seen the new changes, but to me this hole's great, and I just like kind of like I was thinking about it, and I was just like, you know what, that's the one that I like. I just love the golf shot. I love the hole. Yeah. So that's my third.
That's the one you'll get behind more than most people might get behind six. Yeah, I mean, I agree with your analysis. I just couldn't find a way to put it up that high. But, you know, I guess if I were to
Here's the thing. We're at the point
where they're all good.
They're all great.
They're all
like
they're
my
all...
ninth is 15.
Right.
I really love that hole.
Yeah.
I think it's an amazing hole. You want to talk about moments. I think it's like arguably been the most momentous hole in all of the tournaments over the last like 15, 20 years. That's been the hole that mattered. Real quick, you said you had one critique.
Of six. The bunker looks weird. That's it. Like it used to be kind of like one of those big McKenzie bunkers with some real character to it. And now, what does it look like? It kind of looks like a middle finger, I guess.
I feel like a lot of the bunkers just look weird. So,
that's it. I mean, it's not specific to six. I also would like to see the changes play out and see whether players are attacking that back tier as much as they did in
years past. You have to.
Yeah, because the putt is so hard.
Yes.
But if you're threatened more with going over the back, are players going to back off it a little bit?
I think it's so hard to hit something long right. Like that's the thing about it. It's so hard to hit for a right-handed player to hit it long right.
Sure.
It comes up short right.
Yeah.
So it's a right target. Everybody's aiming 10 feet left.
Yeah.
To start. Like, I just don't think balls are going to get there easily. So that's one of the things I love about the hole in general. Is that back right flag, you stand on the tee and you kind of think, like, I kind of have to hit it there. And on so many par threes, it's just like, oh, we'll just bail.
You'll hedge.
Yeah. Like, you hedge.
It does kind of shut down the hedge a little bit.
Like, you don't want to hedge.
Yeah.
It's a, and then, like, I think the other part, so you have this, like, extraordinarily hard pin, the back right on six. And then when it's up front, it's like super fun. It's like dynamic. Like I think about like the way a hole can play. That hole can play at super easy, one of the easiest holes on the course. And then it could be feasibly the hardest hole on the course just by moving the flag. So that's my really strong case for it.
Okay.
For number three.
All right. You said that 15 is number nine for you. It's eight for me.
All right. Same range.
It's that high. Only because it's the hole that I most look forward to seeing in the final round of any Masters. And it's kind of incredible that that's the case, considering all the stuff that has kind of gone wrong with that hole. All the trees in places where they don't really belong. The sheer severity of the green, the pond in front. I mean, the severity of the green is kind of what creates the tension of the hole, but I'm not sure that's really like what it should be necessarily. In any case, the main problem right now with the hole is the extreme narrowing of a corridor where the whole point of it originally is that it was enormously wide and you could kind of choose to go low or high. Now it's like you got to fit it between the trees in order to have a chance to go for it. Nonetheless, there's some magic about this hole where the definitive shot that a Masters champion has to face is that shot into the 15th green.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing that's great is the layup is not easy.
Right. The downhill lie on the layup. That, like, and that was
one of the hardest shots on the golf course is what you lay up to.
And I was thinking when I was watching the hole during Anwa, I was watching Bailey Shoemaker, who was making a big charge in the final round of Anwa. And I thought that she was trending towards being the winner, but then Lottie Woad closed really hard and took it. But Bailey Shoemaker, I was watching her play this hole, and she got behind the trees on the left. And I had a moment of disappointment, like, oh, I'm not going to see her try to go for this green in two. But then she chipped out, and she was on a downhill lie with that short iron or wedge, whatever she had, into the green. And I thought to myself, all that tension is there.
Still there.
Even now.
Hasn't gone anywhere.
With this shot. She hit a great shot, and I thought it was one of the best shots of her final round that I saw. And it's because of the way that that layup zone tilts toward the water. It's just so uncomfortable, and you feel it when a player stands over that that third shot if they lay up.
Yeah. So it's I think you hit on everything. I'd like to see the bunker on the right removed too, because I think Absolutely. It's like actually like a bailout spot.
Yeah, it was once a mound.
Yeah.
So it was once the kind of opposite of what it is now.
All right, hole the an eighth ranked hole. Mine's two, so we've already talked about that. What's your eighth ranked hole?
It's 15.
15, so we're on to seven. Our seventh best hole at Augusta National. What's yours?
10.
Okay, I have 8 here.
You have 8 there. Okay, let's talk about 10 first. A specific thing that I love about this hole. I think people are pretty familiar with the drive and how downhill it is and how exciting that is.
Oh, are we on the 7th or
we're on the 7th place hole.
Yeah.
And that's 10 for me. So I really like the fairway contouring and how that works with the strategy of the hole. Obviously, there's the big speed slot that everybody knows about on the left. But in kind of the right center portion of the fairway, and correct me here if my memory is kind of faulty, but there's like a little platform that gives you a level lie.
Yeah.
And if you find that, then that's really good.
It's not completely level.
Yeah.
But it is.
But it's more level
than
the rest of it. Because one of the big difficulties on that hole is that you're probably hitting off of some kind of weird lie to this green that's super propped up.
This is my 4th.
Yeah.
And it's all because of that second shot.
Right.
I don't think there's
a great second shot.
I mean, like, I don't know of many shots in all of golf that have as many variables and factors to them.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. And what makes it so cool is the combination of the visual intimidation and the actual functional contouring and hazards around that green. So it's propped up in the air. It's so intimidating to look at. You're looking at it and you're looking at it and you're saying to yourself, like, I've got to hit a shot into that. Like, is that really going to happen here? Then you've got the bunker on the right and the big drop off on the left. And so, yeah, it's better to come in from the left side of the fairway. So it's better if you manage to get around the trees and come in so you're hitting against the tilt of the green to stop your ball a little bit. If you're coming in from the right, you know, just it's such an awkward shot from the right. But, you know, even from the left, you've got that huge drop off and you've just got to hit such a precise shot in there.
Yeah, so this is my 4th. I love this hole. All of the holes at this point I love. So mine for the 7th was hole 8.
Yeah, I think that this is a fantastic hole. This was number 4 for me.
All right, so we had those flipped.
I think the strategy of this hole really still works, where if you challenge that bunker on the right, then you've got kind of a ticket to try to reach the screen in 2.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's awesome. The green's amazing. It's one of the coolest greens. I also think like one of the recipes of a great par 5 is like the layup. I think this is probably one of the most compelling layup holes where if you don't hit a good drive, if you're in the bunker, if you're in the pine straw or the trees, like you are just praying that you can get the ball up to the flat. And it's very hard to do that. It's like extremely hard if you're in the bunker to get it up to the flat. Like if you're in the trees, like you're just hoping for a little space to get the ball to the flat because you get such a huge advantage if you can get it up there and get it into the wedge area. So this is not the most demanding tee shot, but of all the holes at Augusta, like among on the range of holes, this is one that if you hit a great tee shot, you can make a 3 because it's so cool. The way you can run it in, you're hitting into a bowl. If you don't hit a good tee shot and you can't get over the hill, then you've got like a third shot that's blind from an upslope lie. And it's like all of a sudden 5 is hard. It's not a foregone conclusion that I'm going to get out of here with five. So it's a great example, again, in a similar vein to nine, where it is not narrow. The corridor is not narrow. It's to the eye, it's not particularly demanding, but the tee shot is very demanding in the sense of if I don't hit a good one, I'm not, it's going to be a very hard hole all of a sudden on a hole that you feel like you stand on and you think you should score really well on.
It's one of the holes that's truest to the original spirit of the Mackenzie and Jones design in the sense that it has one bunker and the bunker is in just the right place and the rest of the hole is about contour and slope.
And topography.
Yeah. Hills and then, you know, contour is both big and small.
Yeah.
Over that hill, the blindness, the sight lines that obstructs and creates. And then the smaller scale contouring around the green, along the approach, it's all just, it's kind of still there. And the design in many ways is still intact there, even though it's been rebuilt various times of the year. Over the years, I question whether there's kind of a little drop off at the front of the green. I'm not sure that should be there, but all in all, this is a hole that is significantly closer to its original form than many of the rest of the holes at Augusta National, and it still works really well.
All right, what's your six?
Number six for me is the first hole. I'm not sure.
We talked about that.
Mentioned that before.
Yeah. We talked about that.
We talked about the first hole. I'm not sure I mentioned it's number six. I hope I have that right in any case. What about your sixth hole?
My sixth hole is the third hole.
Yeah. Okay. So I have three as number two.
All right. I think this is a hole that's gotten better with technology. I think this is the thing. C.B. McDonald had a great quote in one of his books. I forgot which book it was in. Scotland's Gift, probably, where he talked about, like, you know, obviously he lived through changes in equipment, but he said some holes get worse with technology, some holes get better. I think this hole's gotten better. It poses a super interesting question. You know, do you want to lay it back onto the ridge or drive it down into the gully? I think it's insane that guys drive it down into the gully.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, I guess the numbers maybe have bared it out, but yeah. Like, I think that's an irrational decision.
That's the data boy play,
yeah,
right there.
Because down there, it just seems like impossible. Like, it is, you're hitting to like a blind target with like a 40-yard pitch with no green, but like they believe that. That being said, like, you know, Augusta National, outside of the par threes, you are never afforded an opportunity to hit a shot from a dead flat lie with a wedge. The third hole, if you lay back, affords you that exact situation, which is rare. And I'm like actually surprised more people don't exercise this decision. Because if you hit an iron or whatever these guys need to hit to that ridge, you have a 100-yard wedge shot to a green at level, and the green's amazing. It runs away super hard, which you would never be able to tell from TV because it sits up high on a ridge.
And something that doesn't come through on TV is how intricate the contouring is behind the green. I mean, really all around the green, but behind the green, there's a lot going on. There are these little hummocks and drop-offs and various things that can happen to you if you send your short second shot long. And yeah, I mean, I think that three is just a classic example of a short par four that works because of this kind of split fairway concept where you have the high middle right fairway near the bunkers and you have the low long left fairway. And that's the choice. It's a pretty stark choice. It's really one or the other because of or you can go for the green. I mean, some guys can do that, but it's really, really hard to make that shot work. Even if you can hit it that far, it's got to be the right shape. It's got to be really precise. And so that's why you see relatively few modern players reaching that green with driver, though we might see more in the coming years. Who knows? But that choice between high middle, but a little bit farther away from the green, and low left, but the angle from there is just so uncomfortable. You know, I think it's a classic concept for a short par four that simply works, and that's why it has been so durable.
Great hole.
Yeah. All right. So I had that as number two. You had that as maybe number six or five.
What's your six?
My six is one. My fifth is 14.
I had that five too.
Yeah, that five. Okay. Yeah, I mean, this is all about the green here.
I think the land's great too, because the land and the fairway works against the green.
Yes, exactly.
Like what you're trying to do with the green is completely counter to what the land's doing to you.
Right. And then the angle of the tee accentuates what the land is doing. The position of the tee.
I love the tee shot too, because like it's blind.
Right.
You know, like you're sitting way down low. And you just played 13, and you're like, wait, now I got to go up there.
Do you wish they still had that huge bunker cut into the upslope on that tee shot?
I think it actually might be better without it.
Interesting. Yeah. There have been, I mean,
the bunker, where the bunker was, it seems like would be almost telling you to hit it the wrong place. Because, like, you usually think with a bunker set into a foreground, hit it right over it. But I think if it was there, you'd end up in the right rough. With today's mowing lines.
Right.
Again, this is another hole that could just get a little wider.
The trees are pretty thick on both sides of
it.
Yeah. Yeah. You should have, because of the difficulty, complexity, brilliance of the green, it feels like a hole where you should just have a bunch of different options. You should just have this field where you can kind of pick and choose where you want to attack it.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the idea behind the design of the hole. I do want to mention, I mean, the way that I sometimes talk about Augusta National, I give the impression that I think everything about the older version of the course or the original version of the course was better. I don't necessarily think that. I think that some changes have been good. And I think that eliminating that huge bunker that used to feature on the tee shot might have actually been a pretty reasonable change. But, you know, this hole, it all leads to this green. It's one of those ultimate green backwards holes. Once you look at the green, then the rest of the hole comes into focus and starts to make sense strategically. And it's just hard to describe this green. Like it's got these two huge humps in it. You know, it's basically a big false front, but you know, it seems like more than that. It's a little bit farther into the green. And then all these little pockets and sections in the back. And so much is dependent on where the pin is, what you want to do off the tee. And just fantastic hole, bunkerless now.
Yeah, it's an awesome hole. Amazing hole. I really, really love it. When I played last year, my most disappointing moment was not hitting this fairway, because I really wanted to hit the approach shot from the fairway.
You wanted to hit the full approach.
Like, honestly, like probably one of the shots that I most wanted to hit at Augusta National. I ended up in the way in the trees right. I hit an amazing shot to hit the green. Like I had to hit it up through trees. I wanted to just hit a standard approach.
Should you have chipped out sideways?
You know what? I was like,
just for the experience.
I had made a couple birdies. I almost made a putt from down right to like where the Sunday pin was back left. I almost made that putt. I was pretty happy about like the way the hole played out, despite not hitting the fairway. Very memorable.
All right, so that's five for both of us. What's four for you?
Four for me is hole 10. We already talked about it. What's your four?
Hole 8, we already talked about it. What is number 3 for you?
6, we already talked about.
For me, it's 13.
All right, this was 1 for me.
This hole has been brutalized. That's why it's not 1 for me.
All right, so let me make the case of why it was 1 for me.
Okay.
I thought
it's the greatest hole in the world, right? I think this is the greatest designed hole in the world.
I thought about what hole do I want to play the most over and over and over and over again. Which hole, if I took any hole from Augusta National and put it in my backyard, which one would I most want to have?
Would you take the trees with you?
Yes, even in its current state. Which one do I find the most endlessly compelling? Which one would I garner the most joy from playing 1,000 times? And I came to this one. There is no hole that is as interesting from tee to green than this hole.
Listen.
I cannot believe, I'm going to call bullshit. I cannot believe that the third freaking hole is in front of 13 for you. That is preposterous.
I'm sending a message.
I know what you're doing, but it's absolutely...
I'm sending a message.
It's insane.
No, I think we need to make a stand. We need to make a stand against the wasp-wasted fairway on 13.
It's
an abomination. It's offensive. It needs to go. This is the greatest golf hole in the world, and you're bringing the trees in so far that the drive is no longer the drive. The shot is no longer the shot. You know, this is it's an interesting hole to see pros try to negotiate, but it has become a little bit ridiculous off the tee. Now, the second shot is intact, and it's such a great second shot, whether you're laying up or going for the green. And obviously, everybody knows that. The way the land moves and the way the green is and the way the creek is, all of that is very familiar to everybody. I wish they would expand that green out to the left a bit, recapture a section of that green that used to exist. I think that would really enhance the hole overall. So that's another point about the hole that I'm not super happy with. But I mean, you could say that about any number of other holes at Augusta. But the main thing is turning that drive, which should be the ultimate kind of optionality drive at Augusta, and making it a draw execution
test. So you have 12 number one.
Yes, I do.
I have a number two. Yeah. So,
What do you, so you have 12 as number two. Okay, perfect. So we've made our argument about 13. You've registered your displeasure with me putting three above it. And listen, I understand that.
Well, let me just ask you a question.
I didn't make the decision about the trees on 13.
Would you rather have in your backyard 13?
I didn't use that criteria.
Which hole would you rather play 100 times, 3 or 13?
I didn't use that criterion in determining
my list. I just want to, I'm cross-examining the witness right now, and I have a few questions.
You know what? I'm going to answer the backyard question. I wouldn't want to put 13 in my backyard because every time I look at the trees, it would make me sad and it would make me angry, and I wouldn't be able to be a good father to my children as a result. So that's all I have to say about that.
All I'm going to say, if 13 in its current state was what Alistair McKenzie designed, it'd be number one on your list.
Of course it would be. There'd be no contest. It's the greatest hole in the world.
I'm saying, what if 13 today was what was there in 34, if the trees were just there, if they didn't clear it out, if that hole was what it is today, what they put in the ground in 34,
okay,
it'd be your number one.
This is a counterfactual. This is invented history. I don't accept the idea that they would decide to design the hole as it's currently constituted.
I'm just saying that this would be the case.
I mean, you can pretend that, but again, counterfactual. That's not how history unfolded. Why don't we talk about 12? In a way, it's kind of number one by default. I had to think about this a little bit because I knew I wasn't going to put 13 number one. It wasn't a case where I went straight to 12 and said, that's clearly my number one. It was more like I had to go through a process of elimination and realize that 12 was the one that was left. But my justification for it is that it's the greatest par three tee shot to watch in a golf tournament in the world, bar none, by far. There's no contest. That's it.
Yeah, I think the angle of the green's amazing.
Angle of the green's amazing.
The shallowness of the green's amazing.
The wind is amazing. The way the whole environment works on that hole, it is just incredible. And every time players come to that hole in the final round of the Masters, I can't believe how lucky I am to get to watch another group of players hit that shot into the green under such intense pressure. It's so wonderful. And a lot of it is intangible. You know, you could talk about the angle of the green and the placement of the bunker and all that kind of stuff. But there is, you know, a lot of this is mystique. A lot of this is history and memory, the stuff that we said we would keep out of this. But I think with the 12th hole at Augusta, you can't keep that out of it. I think all of that affects the shot the players hit on that hole. And yeah, I just think there's nothing like it in the world of golf, and it works every single time.
Yeah, hey, you know why it's number two for me?
Why?
So much of Augusta National is about the really cool greens. We didn't even talk about how cool 13th green is. I thought we were going to spend...
Because you were getting mad.
I thought we were going to spend 10 minutes talking about why it's the greatest hole in the world and why it's the number one on both our list.
You're so disappointed. This is the most disappointed you've ever been.
Sure enough, instead we're talking about how it preposterously was behind the third hole on your list.
Didn't you have six as number three?
Yeah.
Should I have shouted about that?
Yeah, you could have. That's
right behind 13. You have six.
Well, so anyways, 12, if I'm going to make a critique, everything's about the cool green contours, like 13 green contour. Amazing contour. And it fits with the land, right? If you're playing in from the left side, everything kind of helps you there. If you're playing in from the right, it's harder to use the bowl. So anyways, 12, it's really flat.
Absolutely.
You kind of get on the green and you're like, huh.
But you could argue that that's kind of a virtue of it.
It is a virtue. It's variety.
It's variety in the round, but it's also just like...
You hit the green, congrats.
This is enough. Yeah. It's enough as it is. What we have, you know, you can almost recreate the thought process that went behind making that green, unlike the rest of them, making it basically dead flat. And I think the thought process was, look at what this hole is. We don't need to introduce any more elements to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's number two on my list.
Absolutely. I'm not arguing against you or anything.
I wanted to say why it wasn't number one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right, just a key takeaway I had.
Sure.
I think a lot of it's very hard to get to design par fives in the modern era. This golf course, the par fives, I had hole two was number eight, hole eight was number seven, hole 13 was number one, and hole 15 was number nine. I would have a hard time. I can't think of another course with as many great par fives. Like yeah. Every par five is great.
And it's great as a set.
Yes. Too,
you know, because there's so much variety as to what makes each of those holes interesting. Right. Because on two, it's the land. It's all about that piece of land. On eight, it's kind of like that the strategy, that one bunker and the green complex. So I could go through the par fives like this, but each one stands out for a different reason.
It's stunning. It's a stunning set. I mean, it goes with the par threes. The par threes are really good, obviously. Yeah.
Are there any holes where we were discussing them and you thought to yourself, I wish I put this in a different place, or I could be argued into putting it in a different place?
I think I'm going to turn the tables and ask you that question.
Do I have to apologize for putting three above 13? I mean, I'm going to get ripped on, you know, social media for this anyway. Yeah, I acknowledge that it looks ridiculous, but guess what? So does the drive on 13.
You know, when I look at it, I do think it's kind of crazy. I put 18, 17.
Yeah.
But that's how the cookie crumbled. My right. First go. Listen, this was not me. I did not deliberate over this. This was a gut reaction. This is what the numbers were.
Feelings based.
Yeah.
I could be, but we've had a discussion now and we've had some time to reflect. I think it's interesting to look at and reflect. 10 for me, I had it at number 7. That could be higher.
Yeah, I think.
I feel like 10 is better than 1. I had 1 above it. Yeah, I can see that. Overall, though, fairly, I mean, the spirit of our lists, kind of similar, which is not surprising because you and I believe in kind of similar architectural principles. But there were some similarities in the list.
We should have had someone like Reese Jones on to do this exercise. Maybe exactly. The
someone
next
from
iteration,
a completely different school. Yeah.
Maybe the next iteration is we get somebody that just has like completely different thoughts on golf courses, and we put them, you know, in the rating chair.
I could think of a few people, who would do that pretty well.
All right, Garrett, thank you for coming on and being a part of this podcast. Big Matt Ruchus, working hard this week.
Absolutely, he's a hard-working man.
He's now he's back to doing production. He was doing lots of shooting early in the week.
He produced this episode, right?
He did. What do you want to remind people to do? What should they be doing this week? It's Masters week. It's the middle of the week. There's probably been a content faucet. I mean, we're at the tip of the content faucet when we're recording this. But what do you think they should do? What's the one thing they should do if they enjoy the fried egg?
I think you should consider subscribing to Club TFE if you enjoy what we're
doing. Joining, not subscribing.
Should I not use the word subscribe?
It's not a subscription. It's a membership. You're joining
the membership. Okay. I was off brand there for a second. I apologize. Club TFE. And you know, my usual pitch for Club TFE is all the exclusive content that we offer there, which I love. I love doing. And when I see other things that people are doing for Club TFE on our team, I'm always super impressed and glad that we can do this as part of our membership as a result of the support from our members. But I think that if you're listening to this pod on Masters Week, consider, you know, whether you have had fun listening to our podcasts or reading our articles and just see what we're offering that is at another level for fried egg. So if you like what we're doing, I think you would love what we're doing at Club TFE.
If you're at this point on this podcast, I think you'd love Club TFE.
Yeah, if you stuck with us so far.
All right, we'll be back next week with a Masters recap. But thanks for listening. I hope everybody has a great Masters weekend.